An interview with an American treasure.
Why are you still working at your age? Well, I never thought of that one.
Plus, playing with dolls as a second career, and some thoughts on love. I'm Susan Barnett, and this is 51% The Women's Perspective. Valentine's Day is a day to remember those we love, and I have to admit it, I love Carolee Schneeman. I loved her from the first time I met her at a New York gallery showcasing her art a few years ago. I love her courage, her intellect, and her devotion to her work. You may not know who she is, but a review of a new film about her life and work called her an American treasure. She has pushed the limits, questioned absolutes, and never hesitated to tweak convention. The film is called Breaking the Frame, and that's a fair description of Schneeman's work as a painter, a sculptor, performance artist, filmmaker, and a woman.
When people talk about feminist artists, your name nearly always comes up as one of the pioneers of that.
Okay.
Did you see yourself that way when you were first working?
I was proto-feminist in some sense with my earliest activated collage, where I was image and image maker, iBody, 1963. It's too early for feminism. The work was condemned because you probably know the imagery, the 36 activated photographs where I am determining what the photograph will be and that I'm within my own work. So that it's a collage of the body of the artist and the body of work mm-hmm. of the artist. That was considered unsupportable. Everyone said, this is crap. Go, if you want to paint, go paint. So I start out before feminism has its definitions. By the time feminism in the mid-70s among the artists is really establishing its character, there's a battle against essentialism, which is a critical theory that means you're not taking enough separation between your lived experience and social construction. So all this is a very complicated bunch of theories, and it goes on for the next 30 years in different variations. And so one variation that I'm confronted with that makes my work insufficient or overly sufficient is essentialism. That's identified with nature and the experience of your own body. The theoretical slant then is that the body is constructed of patriarchal theory, and to identify yourself as female at this moment of cultural history is a mistake. You're a cultural worker, or you're an artist making an analysis of different ways of representing imagery. It goes on, and then I'm in a problematic, it's called a problematic, of the abject, theoretical, critical opinion wants women to identify their situation as part of abjection, a subjection, deformation. But what is abjection? I never figured it out. I still don't quite understand it. It seems to be something that gave new academics courses to teach. Mm-hmm. Abjection was followed very quickly in the 80s by masquerade. That to be female is to enter a realm of the masquerade. Oh dear, how are we ever going to figure out what we really feel and want? So after the abject and the masquerade, I missed Marxist Catholicism. Now it's ageism.
Uh-huh.
And I was honored with a small, wonderful exhibit in Vienna this spring, and a new curator who had come from Australia, somewhere like that, and given a very important museum position. I showed him images of my recent work, and he looked at me and he said, why are you still working at your age? Ah, well, I never thought of that one.
Have you created in a separate space in your mind and all this swirls outside you, or were you creating within all of this going on around you?
Oh, it's a complicated issue because it's all these things simultaneously exist. I always felt that I was, in the early days, surrounded by an impenetrable ball of male culture. Everything I was taught in college was of value if it was by a male writer or a male artist or a male philosopher. And when I proposed at Bard doing a paper on Simone de Beauvoir, my philosophy professor, who was Southern, said, "Well, honey, why you want to write about the mistress? Why don't you write about the master?" That would be Sartre, right? So all these things registered very clearly for me, like boing, and influenced some aspect of my determination that I had to take charge of my own cultural history and its roots and its inspirations, 50% of which was from masculine culture, which is the Western ideal, saturation, exemplar. So I always felt that I was living, and many people of complicated cultural determinants feel this also, I was living double knowledge. Mm-hmm. What they taught me that I could absorb and what I needed to bring forward that was considered taboo as ephemera, that would be marginalized. And that was, for me, the whole history of women artists up until the end of the 70s, by which time women scholars, women researchers, women artists had established a powerful historic presence. But I didn't come up with that. That was fought for, mm-hmm, inch by inch. Yeah.
Were you at that time an artist first and a feminist
yes.
second?
No, always. Feminist for me is implied in my ability to make my art. Mm-hmm. You know, not all women artists felt that way, but I always had that strong need to propose the power of women's aesthetic and presence, the power of our physicality, the taboo surrounding birth and pregnancy and menstruation. What were those all about? So very early as a kid, I was brooding on those aspects of male possessing our experience and our history.
And so now there's been a film made about you, and one review that I just read referred to you as an American treasure. What's your reaction to that?
I think that's precious. I had a wonderful cat I named Treasure. It's serious. It's a good thing, because in the context of this critical piece, it's very fine. It's remarkable. You know, it's an honor.
The film must have required a willingness on your part to lay yourself open to let people know who you were, what your work was, what your feelings.
No, not the people. No, I never worked thinking about the people. It was for the vision of this filmmaker. I had utter trust and confidence and excitement and uncertainty for what she was going to do. Maria Dietoslavska is a well-known filmmaker and a feminist based in Montreal. I met her almost by accident. I was teaching in Montreal. It was just an instant affinity, and it developed over 6 years where she would come here. Once she determined she was going to make this full complex film, she would come here and, she'd look through my diaries and I would just say, whatever you need to look at, look through my photographs. She followed me sometimes with a crew to other exhibits of my work. The film has an extraordinary section on the opening of the pioneering feminist exhibit called WAC at the Los Angeles Museum of Contemporary Art. It opened, I guess, 4 or 5 years ago. And it was an international exhibit, and women, significant artists had come from all over. It was just astonishing, and Mario was there. So part of the film that's centered on my life in art has this great community section,
mm-hmm.
yeah, with the different women speaking about their experience and greeting each other and finding each other as friends after many years, all in this one celebratory exhibit.
Mm-hmm. And I know you've said you're very happy with how the film came out.
Oh. Yeah, I'm still dazzled. Yeah, it's quite an experience for me. And the music, the sound is all sections from my original partner, the composer James Tenney. And Marielle and her editors, it's very profound. It's exquisite. And it's work that comes from another visionary artist. There's nothing synthetic or self-conscious. It's very moving. It's beautifully made. It's not programmatic. It's not promoting any aspect of Schneemann. It's following this life. There's a lot of this house. The house is almost the star of the film, because she has imagery of mine from the 60s when I first lived here, when Tenney and I were young and amazing looking and digging in the snow and wrenching a car out from a pile of ice and doing our work. And I don't think there's anything there that doesn't encompass what I'm about.
The artist is Carolee Schneemann. The film is Breaking the Frame by director Marielle Nidoslavska. Find out more at breakingtheframe.com. Coming up, new and radical lives for old dolls, plus some meditations on love. If you missed part of this show or want to share it, visit the 51% archives at WAMC.org. This week's show is number 1283. Beauty is most certainly in the eye of the beholder. I am not a fan of old dolls, but my mom loved them. This week, we have the story of a woman who found a second career when she rediscovered dolls. Susan Wasson thought her retirement would be a time to relax and take it easy, but a new hobby of making dolls out of trash has turned into a career. Producer Rob Feinberg has the story.
Look. Susan Wasson is on her hands and knees at the East Ham swap shop, picking her way through a giant pile of toys in search of the perfect doll. She forges through the Legos and building blocks until at last...
Oh, no head, but a perfect body. So who's going to want this? Really, who's going to want it in life? Me.
Susan runs her hands across the curves of the doll. It's like she found treasure.
Well, look, she has great arms. They don't match this body, I don't think. And then this part is... so chubby.
Susan makes dolls from other dolls. She comes here to the East Ham swap shop two or three times a week on the hunt for as many dolls, toys, and shiny bits and pieces as she can find. When she gets back to her workshop in her house in East Ham, Susan takes the dolls and rebuilds them with new colors and materials. This is where she transforms them into entirely new characters.
This is the studio. And when you walk into my studio, you're blown away because there's all these little faces looking at you.
The workshop is crammed with figurines. They're like little Franken dolls. Washers for eyes, nails for arms, crayons and tacks protruding out of heads. The constant stares from the dolls are a little frightening, but not for Susan.
So some of them I really, really relate to, and sometimes I think I might talk to them. Like, how are you today, full of it? You know, stuff like that. And I'm not serious, but, you know, it gives me comfort. It's art that I've created. They're just finished creatures to me. They're just done, and they're sitting there waiting for their homes.
The dolls have names. Susan points to a specific one in the corner of the room.
Look at her.
She calls it Mimi Spirit.
She is just She's wild, but she's made up. Her hair is gold in it. She's got a red lipstick on, eyeshadow. And her legs say play, love, art, dance, dream, and wish. She's like a little warrior.
Mimi's spirit isn't just a toy. She was the first doll Susan put together. She made her a couple years ago, just a few months before she retired. She worked stressful jobs for 40 years, first at a telephone company on Long Island, and then at a soap shop in Provincetown. Susan says work was always about profits and success, never art.
I was pretty tense and stressed when I had my own business. I mean, we had to make money, so that was a stress. And we had to be successful, and we were in business through a lot of recessions and whatever. So you got uptight.
But Susan knew she had another side to her. She loved drumming, painting, making collages. So after quitting her job and selling the soap business, Susan searched for a new artistic path. That's where Mimi's spirit came from. Susan didn't really have a plan for the doll. But as she added pieces, a character emerged. The wild hair, the lipstick, the eyeshadow. This was the new Susan.
She's me through and through. And she represented me taking that step forward to retire and be free and just do my own thing. And so she had it all. She was saying it all to me.
Thanks to her dolls, Susan says she's turned into a new woman. She's more relaxed, and she takes risks. At 64, she's still trying out new things she never thought she'd do. Things like kayaking and metal soldering.
Oh, yeah, that's going to happen for sure. Look at this.
In her workshop, Susan glues a few washers onto a new figurine. This doll has a normal baby's head, but its round body is bizarre, with electric wire arms and a bullseye on its chest.
He's very weird, isn't he? Yeah, I mean, look at his little socks or nails. And he stands so perfectly. Look at that look. Like, you could not put a hat on him. It would ruin his personality. You know, make him goofy. He's just serious.
When they're finished, Susan's dolls run for around $25 to $100 a piece. Recently, she even showed off the dolls at a prominent gallery in Provincetown and sold 24. But this isn't about the money, she says. She's been through that already. It's about unleashing her creative side and getting to wake up every morning excited and anxious for the day. Susan may be 64, but she feels younger than she has in years.
I can do this forever. Or something like it. I don't know what's next. I like to make animal figures or something, but for right now, the dolls have me wrapped around their little fingers.
For WCAI's Creative Life, I'm Rob Feinberg.
Valentine's Day can be trying if you are single. If you are a single senior citizen, it's even tougher, especially for women. At the City of Chicago's annual Sweethearts Ball for Seniors, women usually outnumber men 8-1. Producers Dan Collison and Elizabeth Meister met some widows eager to defy the long odds.
My name is Marilyn Block. I just moved to Chicago in 1995 after my husband passed away.
My name is Geneva Charles. I've been a widow since 1965.
Eva Gregory.
I was married for 24 years. My husband passed about 5 years ago.
I had three dates. There was one that I would have married, but he deceived me. I took that out on other fellows. I never got close to anyone after that.
I didn't try after he first passed. I thought I needed some time to myself.
I think after you lose a partner, it takes a while for you to think about getting back into the dating scene and meeting people. And now I'm ready. So it's only taken me 10 years, but now I'm ready.
I have a desire to have a nice man that's interested in shows, church, plays, movies, afternoon drives, and just to do the activities that seniors like doing. Bowling.
I go to the senior centers, but there's no guys there. All of them are married, or they have someone, or they sick. I don't want a sick man.
I don't know what their interest is. I really don't. Smoking. Like I said, they play cards over at Central West, and they sit around with their heads on the table. We have the lunch program there.
They come and have lunch, they eat their lunch, and they get up and they look around, they're gone.
I'd like to pursue maybe the internet, getting to meet people that way.
You know, I did that a long time ago. When they hook you up with someone online, I don't trust that. My girlfriend did it, and she met some guy who was crazy, so.
If you're a very aggressive person, you'll call someone that you know is available. You'll bring food over. You'll do all of these, you know, little things in order to try and attract their attention, but that's not my style.
I talked to a fellow like this past Sunday. We watched the Super Bowl together, but he don't drive and he don't do much. That's fine. I drive, but I don't feel that I should go and pick him up all the time and we go here and we go there and I gotta make suggestions. You know I'm still a lady. I like to be treated like a lady.
I'd like to be selected. I'd like to be, you know, sought out, pursued, courted, all that. Still kind of old-fashioned in that regard.
All the buses are here. If you're waiting on a bus, it should go down to your bus.
Overall, it was a very nice afternoon. I think most of the men that were here, there were a couple at our table. I think one may either be a husband or goes with one of the ladies. And the other gentleman was pretty much booked most of the afternoon. People were asking him to dance. And I would have liked the opportunity, but he was just busy all the time. I didn't meet any perspectives here.
You wouldn't come here to get acquainted with a man because he's not here. This is not his interest. Most of them. I just made my 76th birthday. I'm blessed beyond measures. And now it's just a companion thing that I would like.
All last week I was ill. I had the flu. And I felt if I had a male companion, you know, I think I would have gotten well sooner. I just need a male in my life. A good one. Not just a man. A good man. I won't give up.
Those ladies spoke to producers Dan Collison and Elizabeth Meister at Chicago's annual Sweethearts Ball for Seniors. And for those of us in long relationships, what's the secret for making them last? Rosemary Langford remembers her grandparents and their 50-year marriage with fondness and a little bit of alarm.
My grandma used to like telling the story of how her husband, Mac, had tried to kill her. Twice. The first time he tried to kill her, they'd gone for a drive in the mountains on Sunday. People did that then. Since it was fall and a bit chill, Grandma wore what she called her fur, a pony skin coat that's even now hanging in my closet. One wouldn't expect my city-bred grandma to know, but surely my grandpa did when he suggested a walk in the woods. It was hunting season. The first story would inevitably lead to the second, when they were fishing, and my grandma, just under 5 feet tall and unable to swim, fell into the river. Caught in the current, she managed to turn onto her back, from which vantage point she watched my grandpa, watching her, float downstream and around the bend. "He just stood there," she'd say. My grandpa would chime in here. He'd gotten snagged on some shrubs, and tangled in his fishing line, he was struggling to free himself while watching his beloved wife disappear. I'll let you be the judge. My grandpa got his respite, about 15 years, in fact, before Grandma joined him in heaven. When she died at age 89, my brother and I pictured Mac in his celestial workshop. Suddenly he stops, and sure enough, there's Grandma's voice.
"Yoo-hoo, Mac!"
Dutifully, he puts away his tools, smooths his hair, and after just the slightest hesitation, with a bounce in his step, he goes to find his sweetheart.
That's our show for this week. Thanks to Katie Britton for production assistance. Our theme music is by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. If you'd like to hear this show again or visit the 51% Archives, go to our website at wamc.org. You can also email me at sbarnett@wamc.org. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with another edition of 51%, The Women's Perspective.